Great Expectations by Charles Dickens.
Hold your noise. Keep still, you little devil. Rout, cut your throat.
Pray don't do it, sir.
Tell us your name. Quick!
Sir.
Once more. Give it mouth.
Sir.
Show us where you live. Point out a place.
Ours was the marsh country. I managed to point out our village a mile away before the church in front of me went head over heels and he emptied my pockets. I had nothing in them but a piece of bread.
You young dog. What fat cheeks you got. Damn me if I couldn't eat them. Oh. You sit on that stone. And don't you move. Where's your mother?
There, sir.
And is that your father along of her?
Yes, sir. This parish, sir.
Who do you live with, supposing you're kindly let to live?
Sister, sir. Mrs. Joe Gaggery. She's married to Joe Gaggery, sir. The blacksmith, sir.
Blacksmith? You know what a fire is?
Yes, sir.
And you know what whittles is?
Yes, sir.
You get me a file, and you get me whittles. You bring them here to me, or I'll have your heart and liver out. Here.
Keep me upright, sir.
You bring the lot to me tomorrow morning at that old battery over there. You do it, and you never dare to say a word concerning you having seen such a person as me, and you shall be let to live. Now, I ain't alone, as you may think. There's a man hid with me in comparison with which I am an angel. He can hear us. It is in vain for a boy to try and hide himself from that man. A boy may lock his door, be warm in bed, think himself safe. But that man will creep and creep his way to him and cut him open. Now, what do you say?
I'll get them, sir. I'll come, sir.
Say, Lord, strike you dead if you don't.
The Lord strike me dead if I don't, sir.
Now, remember what you undertook. And you remember that man. And you get home.
Good night, sir.
It ain't that. I was holding a frog. Or a heel. Remember?
When at last I looked back, on the edge of the river I could only make out two black upright things. A beacon which sailors steered by, and a gibbet with chains where a pirate had been hanged. The man was limping towards this. I looked all around for the horrible man, but I could see no signs of him.
Mrs. Joe's been out a dozen times looking for you, Pip. Aye, and what's worse, she's got Tickler with her.
Tickler was a wax-ended cane worn smooth by collision with my tickled frame. My sister, not a good-looking woman, was more than 20 years older than I and had established a great reputation with herself and her neighbours because she had brought me up by hand. Joe, with his yellow curls and sweet temper, I always supposed she had married by hand.
She got down, she got up, she makes a grab at Tickler and she rampaged out. She's coming. Get behind me, leg.
Now, where you been, you young monkey? And tell me directly what you've been doing to wear me away with fret and fright and worry, or I'll have you out of that corner if you was 50 peps.
No.
And he was 500 gargeries.
I've only been to the churchyard.
If it wasn't for me, you'd have been in the churchyard long ago. Who brought you up by hand?
You did.
And why did I do it, I should like to know?
I don't know.
Churchyard. You may well say churchyard, you two. You'll drive me there between you one of these days. Come and eat.
My sister had a trenchant way of cutting our bread and butter. First, she jammed the loaf hard against her bib, where it sometimes got a pin in it or a needle, which we afterwards got in our mouths. Then she took not too much butter and spread it as if she were making a plaster with a slapping dexterity. She then sawed a very thick round off the top, hewed it into two halves, Joe getting one and I the other. Though I was hungry, I dared not eat my slice. I felt I must have something in reserve for my dreadful acquaintance and the still more dreadful man. Knowing Mrs. Joe's housekeeping to be of the strictest kind, I slid my hunk of bread and butter down my trouser leg.
Pip, old chap.
What's the matter now?
Well, I say, you know, you do yourself a mischief. It'll stick somewhere. You can't have chawed it, Pip.
What's the matter?
If you can cough any trifle on it up, Pip, I recommend you do it. Manners is manners, but still, your health.
By this time, my sister was quite desperate, so she pounced on Joe, and taking him by his two whiskers, knocked his head for a little while against the wall above my head.
Oh, no, perhaps you'll mention what's the matter, you staring great stuck pig!
You know, Pip, you and me's all as friends, and I'll be the last to tell upon you any time, but such a most uncommon bolt as that.
Been bolting his food, has it?
You know, old chap, I bolted myself when I was your age frequent, and as a boy I'd been among as many bolters, but I never seen your bolting equal yet, Pep. It's a mercy you ain't bolted dead.
You come along and be dosed.
A pint of tar water, the urgency of my case deemed to demand it, was poured down my throat while Mrs. Joe held my head under her arm as a boot would be held by a bootjack. Joe got off with only half a pint.
Because you've had a turn.
The guilty knowledge that I was going to rob Mrs. Joe. I never thought I was going to rob Joe. United to the need for always keeping one hand on my bread and butter almost drove me out of my mind. Then, as the marsh winds made the fire glow and flame.
Now, remember what you undertook. And you remember that man?
As it was Christmas Eve, I had to stir the pudding the next day with a copper stick from 7 to 8 by the Dutch clock, and found the tendency of exercise to bring the bread and butter out at my ankle quite unmanageable, until finally I could slip away and deposit that part of my conscience in my garret bedroom.
Joe?
Cannon, Pip. There's another corn whipped off.
What does that mean, Joe?
Escaped! Escaped!
What's a convict?
A bad man. There was a corn whipped off last night after sunset gun and they fired warning of him. And now it appears they're firing warning of another.
Who's firing?
Drat the boy! Ask no questions, you'll be told no lies.
Ask her.
Mrs. Joe, I should like to know, if you won't much mind, where the guns come from.
The Hulks.
And please, what's Hulk?
That's the way with this boy. Answer him one question, he'll ask you a dozen directly. Hulks are prison ships, right across the marshes.
Who's putting them?
I didn't bring you up by hand to badger people's lives out. Be blamed to me, not praise. People are put in the Hulks because they murder and because they rob and forge and do all sorts of bad. And they always begin by asking questions. Now get you along to bed.
Since that time, which is far enough away now, I've often thought that few people know what secrecy there is in the young under terror, no matter how unreasonable the terror, so that it be terror. If I slept at all that night, it was only to imagine myself drifting down the river to the Hulks, and the ghostly pirate calling out to me through a speaking trumpet as I passed the gibbet that I'd better come ashore and be hanged there and then, for I knew, at the first faint dawn of morning, I must rob the pantry. Every board on the way down cried, "Stop, thief! Get up, Mrs. Joe!" From the pantry, which was far more abundantly supplied than usual, it being Christmas, I stole some bread, some rind of cheese, about half a jar of mincemeat, some brandy from a stone bottle, a meat bone with very little on it, and a beautiful, round, compact pork pie. It had been so carefully covered in a corner that I took it, hoping it was not intended for early use and would not be missed for some time. In the forge, I got a file from among Joe's tools, put up the fastenings as I'd found them, and ran for the misty, damp marshes. The mist was so heavy that instead of my running at everything, everything seemed to run at me. Looming shapes, very frightening to a guilty mind. One black ox with a white cravat on stung my conscience like a priest.
I couldn't help it, sir. It wasn't for myself I took it.
Before pulling down his head, blowing a cloud of smoke out of his nose and vanishing with a kick up of his hind legs and a flourish of his tail. I knew I was very near to the battery when I saw the man. His back was towards me, heavy with sleep, so I touched his shoulder. It was the bad man. Then at the battery, there was the right man, hugging himself and limping as if he'd never all night left off hugging and limping, waiting for me. He was awfully cold. I half expected to see him drop down before my face and die of deadly cold.
What's in the bottle, boy?
Brandy. I think you've got the fever, sir.
I'm much of your opinion, boy.
You've been lying out on the meshes.
I'll eat my fill before the shivers are the death of me. I'd do that if I was going to be strung up to that there gallows directly afterwards. I'll bet you.
I'd often watched a large dog of ours. The man ate the same way, strong, sharp, sudden bites, snapping up every mouthful.
You're not a deceiving imp. You brought no one with you.
No, sir. No.
Well, I believe you. This is goodbye.
I'm glad you like it.
Thank you, my boy. I do.
Won't you leave any of it for him?
Who's him?
The bad man that was with you.
He don't want no whittles.
I thought he looked like you did.
Look, when?
Just now.
Where?
Over there. He was sleeping. I thought he was you.
Tell me!
Dressed like you, or only with a hat. Didn't you hear the cannon last night?
And there was firing.
We heard it up at home, and that's where the...
Why, see now. When a man's alive, on these flats, with a light head and a tight stomach perishing... He hears nothing all night but guns firing and voices calling and sees red coats, torches. This man, did you notice anything on him?
His face was hurt.
Here?
Yes.
Where is he? Where is he? Show me the way he went. I'll put him down like a dog. Curse his iron on my leg. Give us hold of the fire, boy.
And he was down on the wet grass filing at his iron like a madman. Not minding me or his own leg, which had an old chafe and was bloody, but which he handled as roughly as if it had no more feeling in it than the file.
I must go.
He took no notice, so I slipped away. The last I heard of him as I stopped in the wind to listen was the file still going. Joe and I going to Christmas church must have been a moving spectacle for compassionate minds. In his working clothes, Joe was a well-knit, characteristic-looking blacksmith. In his holiday clothes, he was more like a scarecrow in good circumstances. When I was taken to have a new suit of clothes, the tailor had orders from my sister to make them more like a reformatory and on no account to let me have free use of my limbs. Yet what I suffered outside was nothing to what I underwent within. The terror whenever Mrs. Joe went anywhere near the pantry. And under the weight of my wicked secret, I pondered whether the church would be powerful enough to shield me from the vengeance of the terrible man. Yet 1:30 arrived, the Christmas dinner hour, and still not a word of the robbery. I must still suffer.
Open the front door.
It was never at any other time. And I opened it to Mr. Wopsle, the clerk of the church, Mr. Hubble, the wheelwright, and Mrs. Hubble, and Joe's Uncle Pumblechook, a well-to-do corn chandler who drove his own chaise cart.
Mrs. Joe, I have bought you as a compliment of the season. I have brought you, Mum, a bottle of sherry wine, and I have brought you, Mum, a bottle of port wine.
Every Christmas, as a profound novelty, he presented himself with exactly the same words and bottles, and every Christmas...
Oh, Uncle Pumblechook, this is kind.
It's no more than you merit. And now it's sixpenneth of halfpenny.
Let us eat.
For what we are about to receive, may the Lord make us truly thankful.
Amen. Do you hear that? Be grateful.
Especially be grateful, boy, to them which brought you up by hand.
The young are never grateful because they are naturally wishes.
At times like those, Joe always aided and comforted me when he could in some way of his own. There being plenty of gravy today, Joe spooned into my plate about half a pint.
I consider the topic of today's sermon ill-chosen.
You hit it, sir. Plenty of subjects going about for them that know how to put salt on the tails. Look at pork alone. If you want a subject, look at pork.
True, sir. Many a mold for the young.
You listen to this.
Swine!
Pointing his fork at my blushes, as if he were mentioning my Christian name.
Were the companions of the prodigal, the gluttony of swine... is put before us as an example to the young. What is detestable in a pig is more detestable in a boy.
Or a girl?
Of course, of a girl, Mr. Hubble. But there is no girl present.
Besides, young sixpence, think what you've got to be grateful for if you'd been born a squeaker.
He was. If ever a child was.
You would have been disposed of for as many shillings according to the market price of the article. And Dunstable, the butcher, would have come up to you as you lay in your straw, and he would have whipped you under his left arm. And with his right, he would have tucked up his frock to get a penknife from out of his waistcoat pocket. And he would shed your blood and had your life. No bringing up my hand there. No, not a bit of it.
Joe offered me more gravy, which I was afraid to take.
It was a world of trouble to you, Mum.
Trouble? Trouble? Clean plates. Cold, Mr. Gargery. Ladies and gentlemen, you must taste, to finish with, such a delightful and delicious present of Uncle Pumblechook. Oh. A savoury pork pie.
Well, Mrs. Shaw, we'll do our best endeavours. Let's have a cut.
You shall have some, Pet.
A bit of savoury pork pie would lay atop of anything you could mention and do no harm.
No harm.
Oh! It's gone!
I've never been absolutely sure whether I uttered a shrill yell of terror merely in spirit or in the bodily hearing of the company, but I knew I must run away. I released the leg of the table I'd been gripping and ran for my life, straight into soldiers.
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. I'm on a chase in the name of the king.
He was chasing me. He was holding out the handcuffs.
And I want the blacksmith.
And pray, what might you want with him?
Missus, speaking for myself, I should reply the honour and pleasure of his foremost acquaintance. Speaking for the king, I answer, a little job done. We've had an accident with these cuffs. I find the lock of one of them goes wrong and the coupling don't act pretty. As they're waiting for immediate service, will you throw your eye over them?
It'll take 2 hours.
Then will you get about it at once, blacksmith? It's on His Majesty's business. Here, you two, make yourselves useful to the blacksmith. Rest, stand easy. How far might you call yourselves from the marshes hereabouts?
Well, just a mile, Sergeant.
Oh, that'll do. We'll begin to close in on them about dusk. A little before dusk, my orders are. Yes, yeah, that'll do.
Convicts, Sergeant?
2. They're pretty well known to be out on the marshes still, and they won't try to get clear of them before dusk. Anybody here seen any such game?
No.
Well, they'll find themselves trapped in a circle sooner than they can count on.
Beer for the soldiers, and you, Sergeant, would you partake of a glass of...
He shall have the wine, Mum.
His Majesty's health.
His Majesty's health.
And the compliments of the season.
Good stuff, eh, Sergeant?
Well, I'll tell you something. I suspect that stuff's of your providing.
Why?
Because you're a man that knows what's what.
Oh, do you think so? Have another glass. And you, sixpence?
It seemed to me Uncle Pumblechook had forgotten he'd given the bottle as a present.
Your health, sir. May you live 1,000 years and never be a worse judge of the right sort than you are at the present moment of your life. With you, hob and nob. The top of mine to the foot of yours. The foot of yours to the top of mine. Ring once, ring twice. Ah, the best tune on musical glasses.
Your cup, Sergeant.
Thank you, Blacksmith. Men!
Shall we go over the soldiers and see what comes of the arm?
No, I think not.
No, not me.
I will, if you do tell.
Aye. And I'll take Pip, Mrs. Joe.
If you bring the boy back with his head blown to bits by a musket, don't look to me to put it together again.
ladies, thank you.
Thank you, Sergeant.
Sir?
Sergeant!
And Blacksmith, if you're coming, keep well to the rear of the men and speak no word after we reach the marshes. Men, master!
On the marshes, footing was bad, darkness descending, and a bitter sleet came rattling against us on the east wind, and Joe took me on his back.
I hope Dawn they shan't find them.
I'd give a shilling if they'd cut and run, Pat.
The soldiers were in front of us, extending into a pretty wide line, with an interval between man and man. Under the low red glare of sunset, the beacon and the gibbet and the mound of the battery and the opposite shore of the river were plain, though all of a watery lead colour. With my heart thumping like a blacksmith at Joe's broad shoulder, I looked all about for any sign of the convicts. I could see none. I could only hear Mr. Wopsle.
Don't tumble. Try and keep up, Mr. Wopsle.
The soldiers were moving on in the direction of the old battery.
Make to the first shout at the double!
We slanted away to the right, and Joe pounded away so wonderfully I had to hold on tight to keep my seat.
Hold on, Pep! Hold on! A real winder, Pep!
Down banks and up banks and over gates and splashing into dikes and breaking among coarse rushes, no man cared where he went.
Surrender, you two!
My convict and the other man, bleeding and bruised all over, were dragged out. My convict shook torn hair from his fingers.
I took him. I'll give him up to you. Like that.
There's not much to be particular about. It'll do you small good, my man, being the same plight yourself. Here, handcuffs.
I don't expect it to do me any good. I don't want it to do me more good than it does not. I took him. He knows it. That's enough for me.
Take notice, guard. He tried to murder me.
Tried and not do it. I not only prevented him getting off the marshes, but I dragged him back here. He's a gentleman, if you please, this villain. Now the hunks has got his gentleman again. Through me.
He tried to murder me! I should have been a dead man if you'd not come up!
Look at my leg. You won't find much iron on it. I could have got clear of his flats if I hadn't made the discovery he was here. Let him go free! Let him! make a tool of me afresh.
Try again to murder me!
He lies! Let him turn those eyes of his on me. I defy him to do it. You see those groveling and wandering eyes? That's how he looked when we was tried together. He never looked at me.
You're not much to look at.
Did
I tell you?
Enough! Light the torches.
As I alighted from Joe's back, my convict saw me. I shook my head to try and assure him of my innocence. I don't know if he understood, but he gave me an attentive look. I didn't understand. Then he turned away.
All right. March!
You're expected on board.
I wish to say something respecting my escape.
You have no call to say it here.
I know. But a man can't starve, at least I can't. I took some victuals up in the village, where the church stands almost out on the marshes.
You mean stole?
From the blacksmiths. There were some broken victuals. That's what it was. And a dram of liquor. And a pie.
Have you happened to miss such an article as a pie, blacksmith?
My wife did at the very moment when you come in. Don't you know, Pip?
So you're a blacksmith. I'm sorry to say, I've eaten your pie.
God knows you're welcome to it, so far as it was ever mine. We don't know what you have done, but we wouldn't have you starved to death for it, poor miserable fellow creature. Would us, Pip?
He turned his back, and we saw him put in a boat rowed by a crew of convicts like himself. By the light of the torches, we saw the black hulk lying out a little way from the mud of the shore. Moored by massive rusty chains, it seemed in my young eyes to be ironed like the prisoners. I saw him taken up the side and disappear. And then the ends of the torches were flung hissing into the water and went out as if it were all over with him. Mr. Wopsle's great-aunt kept an evening school in her little general shop. She was a ridiculous old woman of limited means and unlimited infirmity, who used to go to sleep from 6 to 7 every evening in the society of youths who paid 2d each per week for the improving opportunity of seeing her do so. Mr. Wopsle read poetry aloud upstairs. The shop was run by Mr. Wopsle's great-aunt's granddaughter, Biddy, an orphan like myself, and with Biddy's help I struggled through the alphabet as if it had been a bramble bush, getting considerably worried and scratched by every letter. But by a year after the hunt on the marsh, I had begun to read, write and cipher on the very smallest scale.
Pip, what are you writing on that slate?
It's for you. A letter.
I say, Pip, old chap. What a scholar you are, ain't you?
I should like to be. The writing's rather hilly.
Why, here's a J and an O equal to anything. And a J and a O. And a J, O. Joe. Well.
Read the rest, Joe.
The rest, eh, Pip?
It says, "My dear Joe, I hope you are quite well. I hope I shall soon be able for to teach you, Joe, and then we shall be so glad. And when I am apprentice to you, Joe, what larks, and believe me, affection, Pip." How would you spell Gargery, Joe?
I don't spell it at all.
But suppose you did?
It can't be supposed.
When you were as little as me, did you go to school?
No, Pip. My father, Pip, were given a drink. And when he were overtook with drink, he hammered away at me mother. And then he hammered at me with a wigger only to be equaled by the wigger with which he didn't hammer at his anvil. You're listening and understanding, Pip?
Yes, Joe.
Consequence, me mother and me, we ran away a lot and she put me to school. But me father were that good in his heart that he couldn't bear to be without us. And so he'd come with a most tremendous crowd and make such a row at the doors of the houses where we was, that they used to be obligated to have no more to do with us and to give us up to him. And then he took us home and he hammered us, which, you see, Pip, were a drawback on me learning.
Poor Joe.
Well, somebody had to keep the pot boiling. Consequence, me father didn't make objections to me going to work in the forge. In time, I were able to keep him, and I kept him until he went off in a purple leptic fit. Mother were in poor health and quite broke. She weren't long a following, poor soul. Her share of peace come round at last. It were but lonesome then, living here alone, till I got acquainted with your sister, and whatever the family opinions or whatever the world's opinions on that subject may be, Pip, your sister is a fine figure of a woman.
Yes, Joe.
A little redness or a little matter of bone here or there, what does it signify to me? When I got acquainted with your sister, with the talk of how she was bringing you up by hand, very kind of her too, and I said along with all the folks. So when we was to be married, I said to her, and bring the poor little child, there's room for him at the forge.
I'm sorry.
Ever the best of friends, and there's Pip. Don't cry, old chap. Come on, old chap. Now, when you take me in hand in my learning, Pip, and I tell you beforehand I am awful dull, most awful dull, Mrs. Joe mustn't see what we're up to. And why on the sly? I'll tell you, Pip. Your sister is given to government.
Government?
Which I mean to say, the government of you and myself.
Oh.
And she ain't over partial to having scholars on the premises for fear as I might rise, like a sort of rebel, don't you see?
Why don't you...
Why don't I rise?
Yes.
Well, I want to say this very serious to you, old chap. I see so much in my mother of a woman drudging and starving and breaking her honest heart and never getting no peace in her mortal days, that I'm dead afeard of going wrong in the way of not doing what's right by a woman. And I'd far rather of the two go wrong t'other way and be a little ill-convenienced myself. I wish it was only me that got put out, Pip. I wish there weren't no tickler for you, old chap. I wish I could take it all on myself, but this is the up and down and straight on it, Pip. And I hope you'll overlook shortcomings.
Young as I was, I believe I dated a new admiration for Joe from that night. I had the sensation of us being equals, a feeling conscious that I was looking up to him in my heart.
Here's eight of them. And she's not come home yet. I hope Uncle Pumblechook's mare mightn't have set 4 foot on a piece of ice and gone down.
Mrs. Joe made occasional trips with Uncle Pumblechook on market days to help him in buying such household stuffs and goods as required a woman's judgment, Uncle Pumblechook being a bachelor. Joe made the fire and swept the hearth. And we worried. Joe was right. It was a dry, cold night, and the frost was white and hard. A man would die tonight of lying out on the marshes, I thought. How awful it would be for a man to turn his face up to the stars as he froze to death and see no help or pity in all the glittering multitude.
Here comes the mare, ringing like a peal of bells.
Oh, the fire, the fire. Come close, Uncle Pumblechook.
Oh, Mum, yes.
Oh, no. Oh. If the boy ain't grateful this night, he never will be. It's only to be hoped he won't be palm peat. But I have my fear.
Oh, she ain't like that, Mum. She knows better.
She?
Well, what are you staring at?
It were mentioned she.
And she is a she, I suppose. Unless you call Miss Eversham a he, and I doubt if even you'll go so far as that.
Miss Eversham uptown?
Is there a Miss Eversham downtown? She wants this boy to go and play there, and of course he's going. And he'd better play there, or I'll work him.
Everybody for miles round had heard of Miss Havisham uptown as an immensely rich and grim lady who lived all alone.
Well, I wonder how she knew you, Pip.
No, though, who said she knew him? And couldn't she ask Uncle Pumblechook if he knew of a boy? Isn't it just barely possible that Uncle Pumblechook may be a tenant of hers and sometimes goes there to pay his rent? And couldn't she ask Uncle Pumblechook then? And Uncle Pumblechook, being always considerate and thoughtful for us, though you may not think it, Joseph, then mentions this boy that I have ever been a willing slave to.
Well put. Now, Joseph, you know the case.
No, Joseph, you may consider that you do, but you do not. You do not know that Uncle Pumblechook, being sensible that this boy's future may be made by his going to Miss Havisham's, has offered in his own chaise cart to take him into town tonight and to take him with his own hands to Miss Havisham's tomorrow morning. Oh, Lord, mercy me, here I am talking to mere moon calves with Uncle Pumblechook waiting and the mare catching cold at the door and the boy grimed with crock and dirt from the hair of his head to the sole of his foot.
I was then soaked and kneaded, toweled, thumped, harrowed and rasped until I was quite beside myself, then put into clean linen of the stiffest character and trussed up in my tightest, fearfulest suit.
There! Fit to go, Uncle Pumblechook.
Boy, be ever grateful to all friends, but especially with them which brought you up a hand.
I had never parted from Joe before, and what with my feelings and the soapsuds, I could at first see no stars from the cart. But gradually they twinkled out one by one, without throwing any light on the question why on earth I was going to play at Miss Havisham's and what on earth I was expected to play at.
Another running sum. 7 and 4.
11.
And 8. Don't lag, boy.
I don't know.
19 and 6. Oh, 25 and 2.
27.
And 10.
Smelling of flower seeds, bulbs and peppercorn, Uncle Pumblechook's conversation consisted of nothing but arithmetic, all the way from his shop to Miss Havisham's house. It was of old brick, dismal, and had a great many iron bars in it. Some of the windows had been walled up, and there was a courtyard in front, which was barred too.
And 14? Oh, can't you hear, boy?
What name?
Mr. Pumblechook.
Quite right.
Plus 7? This is Pip.
The young lady was very pretty and looked very proud.
Come in, Pip.
In we go.
Did you wish to see Miss Havisham?
If Miss Havisham wished to see me,
but
I'd...
But you see, she don't.
Boy, let your behaviour here be a credit unto them which brought you up by hand.
All was empty and disused, and beyond the courtyard loomed a large brewery.
You could drink without hurt all the strong beer that's brewed there now, boy.
Yes, miss.
Not that anybody means to try. As to strong beer, there's enough of it in the cellars already to drown the manor house.
Is that the name of this house, miss?
One of them, boy. The other one was Satis, which is Greek or Latin or Hebrew, I don't care. For enough.
Enough house?
It meant, when it was given, that whoever had this place could want nothing else. They must have been easily satisfied in those days, I should think. Don't loiter, boy.
She was of about my own age, but she seemed much older, being a girl. And beautiful. And self-possessed. And she was as scornful of me as if she'd been 21 and a queen. Access to the house was by a side door, the great front entrance having 2 chains across it. Inside, the passages were all dark, and with only a candle lighting us, the girl led me up a large staircase, along more passages, finally stopping at the door of a room.
Go in.
After you, miss.
Don't be ridiculous, boy.
And she walked away, taking the candle with her. It was a dressing room, well lighted with wax candles. No glimpse of daylight anywhere. Then, at the draped, fine dressing table, her head leaning on her hand, was the strangest lady I have ever seen, or shall ever see. She was dressed in rich materials, satins and lace and silks, all of white, and she had a long white veil covering her hair. But her hair was white. Some bright jewels sparkled on her neck and hands or lay glittering on the table. Then I saw that everything that ought to be white had been white long ago and had lost its luster and was faded and yellow. And the bride within the bridal dress had withered like the dress, and there was no brightness left except in her sunken eyes. Once I'd been taken to one of our old marsh churches to see a skeleton in the ashes of a rich dress that had been dug out of a vault. Now that skeleton seemed to have dark eyes that moved and looked at me.
Who is it?
Pip, ma'am.
Pip?
Uncle Mr. Pumblechook's boy, ma'am. Come to play?
Let me look at you. Come.
It was when I was close to her, avoiding those eyes, that I noticed her watch and a clock in the room had stopped at 9:20.
You are not afraid of a woman who has never seen the sun since you were born?
No.
What do I touch now?
Your heart, ma'am.
Broken.